A very good morning to you, my dear listeners. A very good morning to you in Namibia. I know it's very cold. It's very, very cold, but it's actually good weather here in the north. That's why I love this side of the world during summer. You know, I mean, during winter, because, you know, it can get cold to some other part, but here we are chilling in our, you know, while other people are actually, you know, are really, you know, under the blanket. Don't even want to get out of the blanket, you know. So some people actually come with the blanket at work. So good morning. It's a Wednesday morning. Well, some call it a Wednesday. I mean, a ladies' night. Well, I call it etinda tukoshivike. So good morning and welcome. So, yeah, thanks for joining us at this time. Our time is about 13 minutes. Yes, I'm a bit late. They said the boss is never late. He's delayed, of course. All right. So good morning and welcome to Unpacking the Day. My name is Mike Oshavili, and thank you. Thank you, David, for transferring the mic to this side of the world. Okay. So my name is Big Bank. And this is Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what's really going on in business, economic news, and political news. So every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, the trends and the numbers that are making headlines. So we keep it clear and asking questions that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect of those of Eagle FM. We are here to unpack what others are saying and spark a meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space. This is your platform to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories with me. All right, good morning. And if you're just joining us, as usual, we look at what happened on this day in Africa. So now, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners across the continent and around the world. Welcome to On This Day in Africa. Okay, today we are turning the pages of the calendar back to see what happened on May the 13th. So it is a day deeply tied to freedom, unity, and also the future of the continent. Now, let's start in 1958. Now, on this day, Ghana officially became a republic. Kwame Nkrumah stepped up as the country's very first president. So, but this impact didn't stop at Ghana's border. You know, Nkrumah became a massive, massive, massive inspiration for people across the whole continent, giving a loud voice to the Pan-African movement and also showing other countries the path to freedom or to independence. All right. So now, fast forward to 1963. This was also the year the Organization of African Unity, the AOU, was born. African leader gathered in Addis Ababa, that's Ethiopia, with a clear, simple mission: work together to completely wipe out colonialism and keep African nations united. So that was a major, major, major turning point to where we are today. But the fight for African unity didn't just happen in Africa. If we look back at 1903, May the 13th also marked the historical legacy of W.E.B. Du Bois. Now, he was a powerful thinker and a writer whose ideas about equality and freedom deeply influenced the African leaders who were fighting for liberation. So his work helped actually build the mental foundation for the entire Pan-African movement. And finally, let's bring it to the present day. Yesterday, looking at the recent milestone from May the 13th, today, 2026, the African Forward Summit was happening in Nairobi. So French President Emmanuel Macron and African leaders sit down at the table to talk about the future. So the focus was new investment, boosting trade, you know, completely rewriting the rule book on the relations between Africa and France. All right. So thanks for tuning in to On This Day in Africa. We'll catch you. We'll catch you on the next flip of the calendar. So, and that will be tomorrow. So, good morning. Very good morning if you're just joining us. So thanks for joining us at this juncture. Okay. Politician would say that at this juncture. So what is our thought for the day this morning? It is time for our thought of the day. And here is today's thought. Monkeys don't advise their young ones to be careful on the trees. So they just remind them of the distance to the ground. Hey, that's interesting. So they don't advise their young one to be careful on the trees. They just remind them on the distance to the ground. Now, you know, sometimes life does not actually stop us from making mistakes, you know, but it teaches us by showing us the fall, you know. So, and this proverb reminds us to be wise before we act. Actually, just reminding us to be wise before we act, because one wrong step can cost us a lot. Now, so let us not only hear advice. Actually, what it also, in essence, is that it says, let us not just only hear advice. Let us take it seriously and protect ourselves before the ground teaches a hard lesson. So that's our thought for the day this morning. So, all right. So let's look ahead. What we have today. Now, there's a very interesting story yesterday. I came across yesterday. You probably have seen it, and it's something that I really want to get into it. The critical shortage of essential medication at Windhoek Central Hospital. Now, this shortage is actually putting patients at risk of permanent blindness and other serious health complications. Now, prompting urgent appeal to the Ministry of Health and Social Service to resolve the supply crisis. So we're going to look at that story. It's a story in the Namibian yesterday. So, and we're going to look at that. It's a very interesting and something that we probably quite spoken, the critical shortages of essential medication, something that we have spoken on this program. So now we're going to get into that, because there are interesting things as well to look at that. So, and also what is making headline in the Villager. So what is making actually front page is that as part of a commitment to local content, the Total Energies Namibia is inviting local transport and logistic providers to join its supply chain, emphasizing that future contracts are strictly contingent upon meeting strict international operational and anti-corruption requirements. So, yes, if we have the time, we're going to look into that as well. Very interesting as well, if you are a transport and logistic provider or want to be one when it comes to oil and gas. So it's a very, very, very interesting two stories that we need to look at this morning. Make sure that you are part of this. Make sure that you are part of this. And your participation will also be part of the show as usual. So when we come back, we get into our first story. So stay tuned.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikao shafa sana na longe shifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongo tisamwene. Anage shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Zeithane na Omeguro Nirandi Toma Yue Yongeshefa Yue Okupikira Mo Ikele FM Media House Ngoe Tuende Tuimemeha Uka Kombanga Nena Kara Omkwashi Pareki Uimepo Yomo Programa Detu Moambo Dengira Selma Konorahe Tatu Imu Datu Ndatu Heari Hamano Tano Oniari Ikele FM The Eye.
All right, welcome back, and good morning. If you're just joining us, good morning, and welcome back to Unpacking the Day. You're tuned to Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station in the land. So this is the show where we give you the real story behind the headlines. Okay, so and I'm your host, the Big Mike. So today, ladies and gentlemen. And others, because there are those who might not know where they are, or where they stand. So we need to talk about the medicine cabinet of our biggest public hospital. The fact that some of them are sitting empty. Not running low, sitting empty, completely empty. Okay. Now, and consequences are not numbers on the spreadsheet. It's not like, okay, look at the numbers we're going to see. But they are real people. The consequences are the real people, our mothers, our fathers, our children, who are actually staring down the barrel of permanent blindness, according to the story, because the drugs they need simply are not there. So stay tuned because that is the headline we are going to unpack this morning. Now, let's go into the story. It's an article in the Namibian by Puyehu Power. I think Nakashole, yeah. So, now, the story is the Windhoek Central Hospital, the flagship. This is now the flagship referral facility in this country. The Central Hospital, the Windhoek Central Hospital. So the hospital that people from Katima Mulilo, from Oshakati, from Keetmanshoop, from every corner of Namibia get transferred. That's where you get transferred when their local clinic or local hospital cannot handle their case. You understand? This is where you go. I just want to give you that context. This is the main, as I said, the flagship referral facility in the country. This is also where the specialists are. This is where the eye surgeons work. This is supposed to be the place of large resort. This is a place of last resort. Okay. The place where you go, where nowhere else can help. Can help you. So this is the place. According to the multiple letters written by health professionals and concerned citizens, letter that were leaked to the Namibian newspaper, that hospital cannot even keep basic eye medication on its shelves. Now, we are not talking about luxury drugs here, okay? We're not talking about experimental treatments. So we're talking about the absolute bare minimum medication needed to prevent people from going blind. Now, medication for glaucoma, surgical care, and for children with eye conditions, gone, out of stock, unavailable completely. So, and this is not just about eyes. A second letter from a Namibian resident tells the story on a 70-year-old mother who has not been able to get her chronic medication for diabetes, high blood pressure, and also cholesterol, since February. since February this year. So that is actually 3 months without, imagine now, 3 months without stable, without a stable access to the pills that keep her alive and functioning, because that's normally, you know, high blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes. You need this, you know, to really keep you alive. Honestly, literally to keep you alive and functioning. So this crisis, it really ran deep. It's really run deep. It cut across departments, across condition, across lives, if you want, if you can say. So, now let me take you into the eye clinic at the Windhoek Central Hospital, according to the article. So, an ophthalmologist. You call them ophthalmologist. How do you read this? Ophthalmologist. I think, yeah, ophthalmologist. The eye specialist. Okay, so that's to make it easy. Ophthalmologist. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Ophthalmologist. Why always these medical people have so difficult name? Ophthalmologist. Well, it's coming from Greek, I think. You know, so an eye specialist, someone who, you know, who trained for years to save people's sight. Okay, just to make sure. Well, sat down and wrote actually a letter to the hospital medical superintendent. Okay, so now that letter, which has now been made public, read like read like a distress signal from a sinking ship, you know? No, seriously. Eh? So the specialist lays it out plainly. He actually lays it out plainly. The three medication that he calls the bare basic for treating sight-threatening glaucoma, and for managing pressure spike after surgery or in a patient with inflammation, those three medications are simply not available. Zero stock. The pharmacy shelf are empty. And without them, the eye clinic cannot actually function. So, if you didn't hear me for the first time, the eye clinic cannot function. We're going to come after this. Stay tuned.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back. Yeah, no, I was just saying, we're actually looking at the critical shortage of medications in the Central Hospital, Windhoek Central Hospital, but also across the country, across anywhere in the country. So, and I was saying that the eye specialist, so was saying actually wrote a letter to the superintendent, the hospital medical superintendent, and that letter actually leaked to the public, made it in the public, you know, so make it to the news. So it's actually the specialist was saying the three medication that he called the bare basic for treating sight, for treating sight threatening glaucoma. Okay, and also for managing pressure spike after surgery or when the patient is actually with inflammations, those three medications are simply not available. They are just not available. And the most important point is that the pharmacist, I mean, without them, the eye clinic cannot function. Now, if you hear the glaucoma is not a minor condition. It is one of the leading cause. It's one of the leading cause of irreversible blindness worldwide. Now, it damaged the optics nerve. It damaged the optic nerve slowly, silently, but once that damage is done, it cannot be undone. So we talk about slowly, silently, you know. So now, the medication that are out, the medication that are out of stock, we are talking about drugs with long names, you know. Drugs like Bimatoprost, Timorol, Brimominidine, Dozolamidine, Dozolamide, or Dozolamide, or, well, don't worry, okay? I just give you an idea. So don't worry about the names. What matters is what actually they do. So that's what matters. So these are the drops and medicine that actually treat now glaucoma. Now, these are the front line, if you like. So these are kind of like the front line weapons against that damage that we're talking about. Now, without them, patient could have been, could have been treated instead of losing their. So now the patient that could have been treated are instead actually losing their sight. The whole thing is not because now the condition is untreatable. In this case, and not also because the doctors lack the skills or something like that, but because the drugs are not in the building. The drugs are just not in the building. And it get worse. It get worse, you know. Make sure that you actually find that stories as well. Or probably you have read the story as well. Now, the specialist warns that the medication used after the cataract, the cataract surgery, is also out of stock. Now, the cataract surgery, one of the most common and most necessary operations performed at that hospital, particularly for our elderly population. This is normally particularly for our elderly population. So if you cannot provide the post-surgical medication, you cannot safely do the surgery. Do you understand? You cannot safely do the surgery, period. So what happened? The operation get cancelled. When the operation get cancelled, so the patient who were already waiting over a year for the surgery date, they have been waiting for a whole year for their surgery date, they get pushed back even further. And what do you expect to happen? So they may even end up being blind. And that's the whole thing. That's the whole issue here. And the ophthalmology department, the department of those who are specialized in eye specialist department, they perform between 35 to 50 operations per week. 35 to 50 operations per week. That is dozens of families affected every single week. This crisis continues. Every single week. So then, there's a matter. There's also an issue. There's a matter of tropine. Tropine is a drug that has been unavailable for at least 5 months. 5 months. This medication is very critical. Critical for diagnosing and treating children with strabismus. Strabismus. So children with strabismus, that is a cross eye. That's a cross eyes. So a condition that if caught and treated early, it can be corrected. You understand? If it's caught and treated early, it can be treated. But now without a tropine, which hasn't been stocked for 5 months, the diagnosis get delayed, the treatment get delayed, and the children end up with permanent complication with nomesha tarafan. And we're talking about kids here, young Namibian children who could have been had normal vision, now carrying a preventable disability. That's a preventable disability, because a basic medication could not be procured. So, now the specialist also raises the alarm about treatment for children with chronic allergic eye inflammation, a condition that, if it's left untreated, can actually lead to permanent vision loss. Now, the drug for that, also out of stock, or maybe in some area in limited supply. Out of stock. Namibia, think about this serious now, okay? Seriously. Think about this now. Especially doctor is literally putting in writing, if we do not get these medicines, people will go blind unnecessarily. That's what the specialist is saying. Okay? Children will grow with damaged vision. I want you to think about this seriously. Children will grow with damaged vision. And the only thing that's standing between this patient and permanent disability is a supply chain that has broken down. Yeah? A supply chain that has broken down. Okay, in the story, in the article, let me bring you the human side of this crisis. Okay, because behind every empty pharmacy shelf, you know, that empty pharmacy shelf, there's a person, there's a family, there's a story. Yeah? There is a story. Now, let me bring you a story. There is a story there, a Namibian woman by the name of Kylin Basson, you know, wrote an open letter to the Minister of Health and Social Service on the 10th of May. On the 10th of May. Her mother is a 70-year-old. She lived with diabetes. High blood pressure and high cholesterol. Now, the three chronic conditions that require, remember, that three chronic condition require daily medication to keep under control. Okay? Now, since February, her mother has been unable to access, some of her chronic medication because of stock shortages at the public hospitals. Every week, Basson goes to the hospital to try to get her mother's blood pressure medication. Every week, the pharmacy staff tell her the same thing. It is still unavailable, week after week after week. And what happened to her mother? She's now actually suffering from migraines and ongoing illness, linked to uncontrolled blood pressure. A woman who was stable, who was managing her condition, is now deteriorating. Not because her body has failed or something like that, but because the system has failed her. Okay? The system has failed her. Yeah. And Basson makes a point in her letter that I think it's a brilliant in its simplicity. Now, she say, the absence, and I'm paraphrasing, the absence of the basic chronic medication can push stable patient into hospital bed that could have been kept free through preventions. You know? Now, you know, patient that could have been, you know, kept free from prevention, you know, if you just, you know, focus more on prevention, now they are lying in bed. They are pushed now into hospital bed because, you know, because we couldn't provide basic, you know, medications that would have actually prevented her from, you know, that could have helped her just to manage her illness well. Yeah? And I want you really seriously, I want you to think about that for a moment. Yeah? And now, think of it in a very deeper way, in terms of prevention. Prevention is better than cure in that kind of things, that a month's supply of blood pressure pills cost, that would cost, that would cost a fraction of what a single emergency hospital admission cost. You know, these blood pressure pills cost would be much cheaper for the hospital, for the ministry, than actually when now this person is, you know, is in emergency hospital, is in emergency admission. The cost of that would be too much. Prevention is always cheaper than crisis management, because that's where we are now. And yet, here we are, allowing stable patients to tip, you know, over into emergency because we cannot keep the basic on the shelf. We cannot keep the basic on the medical basic medicines on the shelf. That tells you where you are. That's honestly tell you. You can't, you know, cover, pay, what is it? What is the saying? You know, the word is just gone. You don't paper. Oh, okay. It's gone. So what I want to try to say is that these are not things that you can cover up. It's telling. But the other things also, we also give credit where it's due, because Basin herself does something important in her letter, and I'm just think she actually being a little bit sarcastic. I would have said she should be genuinely, but I will tell you why I'm saying that. She acknowledges the improvement she has seen at public hospital, which is there is a lot of improvement. I think there's a lot of course improvement, definitely. That's why I said give credit where it's due. So in terms of renovation, better emergency services, you know, there is an improvement in some area. So she does not come in hot with nothing but complain. No, she says you have shown that improvement is possible. You have shown that public health facilities can be upgraded. Now, this is where now, you know, the ankle comes in. Now, apply the same urgency and commitment to making sure essential medicines are available consistently. That is a fair ask, I think. It's a fair ask for any one of us. That's all what we want. That is a reasonable ask. And it is an urgent ask. So the reason why that comes in the letter, I can understand, is because you say, look, if you can improve, like we're talking about the VIP improvement that has been done in short period, you know, in a short period. So the whole idea is that, well, if you can do that in a short period, and we can see that, we can touch it, you know, now we want you to do the same thing. Have the same urgency. Just as you have the same urgency of that, have the same urgency and commitment to making sure the essential medicines are available consistently. That's why I said there is a cockiness in that. Is it cockiness or just to say, all right, we see what you're doing, but why are you neglecting this? Do the same. When it comes to yourself, you make sure things are done quickly. That's there. That's there, everybody to see. There are money available. There's money available to do things that involve, you know, the VIPs. But for ordinary persons, nope, there's no money. Financial constraint. That's your leader. That's our leader. Yeah. So that's where we are. Now, she also calls for something that, should be a bare minimum. Now, the whole question of clear communication about medicine shortage. I know the ministry wouldn't do it because, you know, but the thing is that, you know, emergency procedure for chronic. She's asking now clear communication about medicine shortages emergency procedure for chronic patients when their medication runs out. So some kind of a regular public update on procurement delays or stock availability. Now, that actually what should be. But probably the ministry wouldn't do it because it exposed itself. But from her point of view is that she keep coming, you know, since February. Every week she keep coming and she are told the same thing. First of all, you spend your money. Imagine maybe in Windhoek it's much easier because you just use a few tax monies, you know, which you don't have. Imagine in the rural area where you spend the money to travel. You were somewhere in the rural, you have to travel to Rundu. You have to travel to Rundu, and that costs you about probably $50 or whatever, or even 100, it doesn't matter. So, and you do that every weekend, you are being told, you know, we don't still have, well, there are no medical available. You see, yesterday we were talking about, you remember if we're talking about tax fares and how that's only affect much of the poor. The same thing, you know, you stay a distance from the health center and you spend money to go for, you know, for your medications, and every week you are told there's nothing. And this is what she's actually asking. Should there be an emergency hall? Now, this is my idea, okay? So, I mean, the question, not my idea, should be there. I'm just asking because now, when you have people coming, when you have people now, you know, spending their money for just coming to check if there are medicine available, they lost money until sometime they cannot be able to come. Do you understand? And we don't seem to understand that. I think our leaders, those who are responsible, don't seem to understand that. What I'm asking, should there be an emergency hotline, for example, or a text message alert system telling the chronic patients when their medicine is in and when it's out of stock? It saves them from travel every week. And it's exactly what this person is asking. That should be the bare minimum. Clear communication about medication shortages. And is it that difficult to have a text messages alert system? Sometimes that's better than sometimes where we actually spend money. No, this is serious. A person may come 3 times, 4 times. Imagine the person in the rural area. And I think sometimes our people forget where they come from, the conditions. As soon as you get there, you forgot. Or if you don't forget, you don't seem to have power to change things that would help your people. When you're sitting here, you're telling, you know, I want to help my people. Once you get there, you forgot. Maybe even you forgot. You kind of like, okay, there's nothing I can do about that. Simply, a simple text message, alert system. To tell the person, oh, okay. So don't come, you know, don't come this week because we still don't have medicines or stock are still out, and or come, your medicine are available. It saves people from traveling every week and spend their money for nothing. So at this point in time, in that way, you don't leave patient in the dark. You don't leave patient in the dark. If there's a shortage, tell people. Give them options. Help them plan, because then that will also help the person to say, okay, I'm getting really worse. Maybe let me borrow money somewhere let me use the money that I have to go to private pharmacy or something. You know, something. Oh, man. Yeah. So, You just make people actually discover the problem only when they are already standing at the pharmacy counter, okay? When they are already at the pharmacy counter is when you tell them, and they have the prescription in hand, and the pharmacy says, sorry, We have nothing. It just tells you where we are. Honestly, it tells you where we are. Now, what some of you might be asking, how does a country main referral hospital, now we're talking about central hospital now, the country, actually run out of basic medicine? I think that's a question that you, when you're reading this, how does that happen? And of course, of you, many of you, you know, we know that this didn't happen overnight. Yeah? And let me give you some context to this. And if you have been listening to this show over the years, not only this year, you know, medicine stock out in Namibia public health facilities. These are not invention of, these are not 2026 invention. Okay? It's not something now we just say, oh my goodness. No! Yeah? We're not even shocked. I don't think you listen to me and you're kind of like surprised. We get used to it. That's where we are at. You're not shocked at all. And that's the danger. You're not shocked because you get, this become a normal thing. We get used to this, and it becomes normal. And we have been here before. We have been here before. We have heard the warning from the, the Auditor Generals. We have read the parliament, the parliamentary questions. We have seen, we have seen the headlines about expired drugs, about procurement bottlenecks, about central medical stores struggling to keep up with the demand. You know, yeah, the Minister of Health and Social Service has over the years blamed everything from global supply claims disruption. And you remember COVID? Remember COVID? To tender delays and budget constraints and to supply who don't deliver on time. You know, some of those reasons, and some of those reasons are valid. Okay? I'm not just saying this and said, well, this is not, some of them are valid. You know, medical stocks have been recurring, it has been a recurring problem in Namibia's public health system for years. And this is not the first time we have heard these stories. So, you remember, as I said, you remember COVID back in 2018. There were widespread report of antiretroviral shortage at state facilities. A scandal in a country where this is a scandal. And it's not only even, when was we doing this? A few weeks ago? A week ago? Yeah. We were talking about the same shortage of antiretroviral drugs a week ago. That's a scandal in a country where so many lives depend on that daily ARV regimen. It is a scandal. In 2020 and in 2021 during COVID, the crack widened further. There was this, you remember that. Supply chain globally went into meltdown and Namibia is already fragile procurement, system backed under the pressure. It buckled under the pressure. That's where we are at, my friend. That's where we are at, And let not talk even about central medical stores. The entity responsible for procuring and distributing medicine to all public health facilities. This one has faced, the other thing is that has faced underfunding. That's also one issue. There has been that complaining. It's also have staffing challenges. And worst of all, a logistical bottleneck for years. That has been there. And nobody seemed to be, I think, as Mandume like to say, somebody's benefiting from that. No, seriously, when these issues has been there for years, I think Luvinda, when he comes in, there are certain things that you could have, you see that someone is trying to do, but the system, where does that word come from anyway? In Miami, no midi, no matter what you're trying to maneuver, where you're trying to, the system has grown and it has roots. The procurement process itself is a part of the big problem. So the Ministry of Health goes through, you know, central procurement board and sometimes direct procurement. There has been some direct procurement, but the timelines are often painfully slow. They are often slow. Tender get delayed. Supplier fail to deliver on time. You know, the budget get approved late. You know, by the time the medication arrives, the existing stock has long, you know, run out. Patients have already suffered the consequences. It's a vicious circle, man. It's a vicious circle. And it keep repeating. It keep repeating. Until sometimes you get tired. No, seriously. Yeah, sometimes you get tired. You see the same thing over and over and over, and you kind of like, you know, and some of them are common things, as simple things that you think, okay, what's so difficult about this? What is really the issue about this? Maybe let me lay out the player for you, okay? Because I want you to understand who has a hand in this whole thing. Who are those who have a hand in this one? First one is the Ministry of Health and Social Service. The backstop with them. They oversee procurement, distribution, and the overall function of public health. You know, the ministry spokesperson in the article, when approached by the Namibian, reportedly could not immediately comment. We'll come back to that silence. Okay, we'll talk about that. Excuse me. Now, the second is Central Medical Stores, the warehouse engine, okay, that is supposed to feed every public hospitals and clinic in this country. And we just talked about, you know, the issues that are going there. They're confronting them. And then we had the frontline doctors and nurses, the one writing those leaked letters out of frustration. Out of frustration. Of course, these are people who frustrate. They want to do their job, but their hands are tied. Their hands are tied behind their back. These are professional risking. When somebody actually writes something like that, he's actually risking their career. You may hear, you know, you may not hear it, but, you know, this is someone, you know, risking their career to whisper to the media, because internally, the alarm bells are not being answered. They are not being answered. Or they are not loud enough, I think. They are not being answered loud enough. So is someone actually risking their career here for the love of their people, of their patient? And of course, then we have patient and family, like the Basson family that we just looked at, where a daughter is doing whatever every Namibian child does, trying to keep her elderly, you know, mother alive. So, and the other players are the private sector and the donors, you know, because the public supply, when the public supply collapses, if the public, you know, supply collapses, where do we go? Who pick up the slack? Who pick up the slack? Private pharmacies. And of course, they do that at a price most Namibians actually cannot afford. That's where we always go. So, finally, you know, and this is where now I have a question, actually. Finally, is the parliament and the overseas bodies, the bodies that oversee some of this sector. So where are the MPs? Where are the Member of Parliament? Where is the Standing Committee on Health? Where are they? And this is when we need them. So when we need them on the floor, asking hard questions. This is when we need them. And where are they? And if you're listening and you're an MP, where are you? Seriously. Now, what makes this moment, really, what makes this moment particularly urgent is that we are now seeing the consequences move, you know, from inconvenience. It was just an inconvenience to a permanent harm. It's actually becoming now a problem. So when hypertension patient cannot get their pills, seriously, people, that is a serious. But potentially reversible. It's something that's serious, but it's potentially reversible. When a glaucoma patient cannot get their eye drops, the damage is permanent. It is permanent. So as the article say, the blindness does not wait. So, I mean, it's about blindness. The article is talking about blindness because the blindness does not wait for the next tender cycle. So, but they're kind of like, okay, I wait until, you know, the next tender cycles happen, you know. The blindness doesn't. Vision loss does not pause. Yeah? It doesn't pause while the paperwork clears. Yeah? Every day this medication are unavailable, someone is losing sight. Yeah? Someone is losing sight that they will never get back. And I don't know how serious this is supposed to be. And let me be clear, this is not a problem of medical knowledge or clinical skills. Namibia's the ophthalmologists and physicians are well trained, highly capable professionals. We have Dr. Ndume, Dr. Helena Ndume, one of our most celebrated eye specialists, has performed tens of thousands, you know, of surgeries, and brought sight back to the countless Namibians, you know, have done that. Now, when a practitioner of that caliber are raising the alarm, you know the situation is dire. Seriously, you know the situation is actually dire. All right. Now, I wanted you to discuss this. So our time is about 4 minutes past the hour of 9. So maybe some questions for you to discuss. I want you, the listeners now, to think about these issues too. I want you to think about these issues. And let us have this conversation as a nation. Let's have this conversation as a nation. Yeah? So now, a few things that we, just to broaden our thinking. So now, why does it take a leaked letter seriously? A media exposes for the Ministry of Health to act. Why? Why are doctors forced to go public with their distress before the system actually responds? Should it not be a standard practice? That's what it should be. It should be a standard practice that when a critical medication runs out, there's an automatic escalation. An emergency procurement trigger, something, you know, a contingent plan. Why are we relying on whistleblowers instead of early warning system? Instead of relying on a whistleblower, we should have an early warning system. That's what we should have. So, and the question is really a bigger one, is that where is the accountability? When a patient goes blind, let's say, for example, a patient goes blind because the medication was unavailable. Who bear the responsibility? We just sit here and said, oh, the patient, but they gone blind because there was, because, and I know, and I know somebody. Now come to think of it, maybe because the medication was unavailable. Now, who bears the responsibility? The pharmacy that could not supply the drug? The procurement officer that process, you know, the tender too slowly? So all this is involved. Or the budget officer. You can also think of the budget officer that did not release the fund on time. It's a chain. And the bigger one. And the main person, the minister, who oversees the entire chain? Okay? Someone need to answer for this. Well, we have we have Sikongo actually answer for what happened. And this is serious. This is very serious. You see that? This is very serious. Yeah? So we need, someone need to answer for this. Maybe not in punitive sense. Okay, it could be in punitive sense. Yeah? It could be in punitive sense. Although may consequences matter, because these consequences matter. So, but it's a system sense. Maybe in a system sense, you can also think in terms of system sense. But I don't mind in a punitive sense, because this is very serious. We have seen being done to others, so why not? Why not? Even in a punitive, someone need to be responsible. Someone need to answer for this. Seriously. And if we don't, and if we do not know where the break can happen, so sometimes the problem is that if we don't know where the breakdown happens, we cannot fix it. So when you're talking about, I'm talking about, a pharmacy, is it where is the problem? Is it the procurement officers? Is it medical stores? Where is it? When you don't know where the breakdown is, where the breakdown is happening, you won't be able to fix it. And it looks that way. Eh? We don't see where the breakdown. Now, the other thing is, for this, maybe we will hear what the ministry's response is. So we need to hear that. It just happened. We just get to know this yesterday. Now, the Namibian reached out to the ministry, spokesperson Walter Kamanya, for comment. As I said, I come to this later. So he could not immediately respond. Well, I understand. I have been in a position of a PR, and I understand that spokesperson need time to gather information sometimes. Now, but this story broke in the newspaper of, I think, yesterday, 12th of May, Now, that's not the point. The shortage have been building for months. Do you understand? And that's why I'm saying, why don't you have the early warning system, some kind of? So the shortage have been building for months, especially now when it comes to the central hospital, into central hospital. So at what point does the ministry proactively come to the nation and say, hey, here's what's happening. Here's what we are doing about it. This is what's happening. Here's what we are doing about it. Here's, and here is when you can expect relief or something like that. So you wait until this comes in, come publicly this way, and then that's where now you panic and, come up with some kind of excuses or something. And one thing that people don't realize is this, and it's very important to understand this, silence breeds panic. Silence breeds panic. Silence breeds distrust. And silence in this case may well breed blindness. Seriously. And so what I tell them, and if the ministry has shown it can renovate hospital, for example, and improve emergency, as Basson said, they can improve emergency services, as Basson rightly acknowledges, then why can it not apply the same agency to the supply chain? Why? I think it's a fair question to ask. Now, you have to what is the problem? Is the question, is it the question of political will? Because that's very important. Okay? Is it the question of budget priorities? Is it the question of management competence? is the question of management competence. And that's is something that's lacking in Namibia. Management competence. Yeah? It is a big problem. Or is it a question of something deeper? Yeah? A system that, as I said earlier on, it's a system that treat infrastructure as visible. You understand? Now, I'm talking politically, yeah? You know, voting, winning progress. It's infrastructure is something very visible. You can see it. Yeah? That would be a vote winning progress. You understand? Medicine supply chains as invisible. So you treat it as something invisible, no one sees. Unglamorous admin, you know, that's kind of an admin work, and that nobody wants to own, you know. So you look at things that you can, you know, talk about because now you can smell, touch it, and all that. Eh? As I said, remember what I said, silence breed, you know, panic, silence breed mistrust. Eh? And perhaps the most important question of all, how many people have already suffered permanent harm that we don't even know about? That we don't even know about. So the letter that were leaked represent a tip of the iceberg. It just represents the tip of the iceberg for every doctor who write a letter. You know, how many are silently managing with substandard alternatives? How many? And what we also can say, for every person who goes public, how many families are suffering in silence in rural clinic across the country where there is no journalist actually to tell their stories? Eh? Basson was able now to get somebody who can tell their story, but what about those are in rural clinics where, in a rural area, where there's no journalist to tell their stories? All right, you're most welcome to come through. Our telephone number. So what is your take? I want to hear from you, Namibia. I really want to hear from you. Has this affected your family? You know, maybe you're a person that has been affected. Have you or someone you love been told that your medication is out of stock at a public hospital, a public clinic? Has that happened to you? Yeah. How did you manage, for example? How did you find alternatives? And did you simply go without? How did you manage? And what happened? What happened to your health as a result? And I want to ask you this bigger question. This is a very big one. And more thinking, more broader. So, do you think our public health system is in crisis? From where we are now, do you think we're in crisis? Is this just a temporary, you know, supply glitch that will sort itself out? Do you think is that something that will sort itself out? Or is this the normal ebb now and flow of a complicated supply chain? So, or is it this a structural failure that demand a fundamental reform? So at the beginning, we saw what, you know, the new minister was trying to do, but it looks like she's hitting the wall, you know, she's hitting the brick wall, you know. Is this a structural failure that demand a fundamental reform? Let's talk about it. You know, let's get this conversation going, because the people who are losing their sight right now cannot afford to wait for the next news cycle, my friend. 08333 66091, 08333 66091. So you are welcome to come through and have your reaction to this story. If you have read it yourself, or well, you just follow what we have unpacked this morning. 08333 66091.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omudiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikao shafasa na nana longeshifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nirandithoma yoe yongeshifa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yo mo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma, onoraje tatu imu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And that's right. That's right. Welcome to Unpacking Today here on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station in the land of the brave. All right, our time is about 19 minutes past the hour of 9. And thanks for joining us. I will be with you until 10 o'clock. We still have a couple of minutes, enough minutes actually, for you to come through and engage me on this very important topic that we're looking at. So, yeah, let me give you key points from this segment, from what we have unpacked so far. So, Windhoek Central Hospital is out of stock on critical eye medication, including frontline drugs of glaucoma and post-surgical, you know, care, putting now patient at risk for permanent blindness, according to the article, and cataract surgeries may have to be suspended because you know, the lack of this critical, you know, critical medications, adding to an already, you know, yes, long waited list. Yeah. So, and chronic medication for condition like hypertension, diabetes, and cholesterol has also been unavailable for months. You know, and leaving stable patient now to deteriorate, like the story that we heard, into they now deteriorating into a medical emergencies because of the chronic medication, because of the shortage of this medicine. Now, and health professionals, you know, have sounded the alarm through letters to the Ministry of Health. A 70-year-old woman's daughter has pleaded publicly for actions. So, but the ministry has yet to provide a substantive public response. All right, watch out for that. And the medicine, you know, stock out. I think this is a recurring and a systemic problem in Namibia public health system. This is a problem rooted in procurement delays, as we constantly actually, you know, talk about here, budget bottleneck, and logistic failure at the central medical store. I think the central medical store is part of this. And we, not long time ago, we have actually stuff that have been involved in allegedly, you know, we always have to put that, allegedly involved in, you know, in actually stealing, if you put it so plainly. So, yeah, so this is not new, but the consequences are now moving from temporary inconvenience to irreversible harm. Eh? And that's why it make it this more urgent. So, yeah, the call from the public is very clear. Better communication about shortages, you know, emergency procedure for chronic patients, and regular update on procurement, and above all, the same urgency as now Basson said, at the same urgency, you know, applied to medicine supplier, as has been shown for hospital renovations, you know. So the same energy, the same, you know, the same urgency should apply. Well, Namibia, we deserve a health system that works. Is that too much to ask? We deserve a health system that works. Not just when the cameras are watching, you know, because that seemed to be, you know, the whole thing. Not just when the president is visiting, is when, you know, every single day for every single patient, we deserve the health system that works, you know. I think, and the time of action is now. The time of action is not tomorrow. It's not tomorrow. It's not in the next quarter. It is now. N-O-W. Now. You know what? Because the thing is this. While we debate and deliberate and process tenders, you know, someone is losing their sight. That's the problem. Someone is losing their sight. And that, my friend, is a price we should never be asked to pay. That's a price we should never be asked to pay. All right. So, 081, 08 triple, not 081, 08 triple 366091, 08 triple 366091. So, what is your take? So, you are most welcome to come through. And have your say and have your reaction. What do you think about that in general? All right. So, 083-66091. I'm waiting for you.
Omudiha utekiro kaguna I matina omjo. Chikao shafa sana na longe shifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongo tisamwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Zaita nina omayakuro ni randitoma yoe, yongeshefa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi paregi uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengera selma konara heta tuimu. Datundatu heari hamano tano oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace. I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right. Welcome back to Eagle FM. And you are tuning in Unpacking the Day. You're tuning into Unpacking the Day. So, we have the traffic advisory, IUM winter convocations in Ongwediva. So the university, the International University of Management, IUM, is proud to announce a historical milestone as it hosts its first ever winter convocation in the northern Namibia. Now, the ceremony will take place on Friday, the 15th of May, 2026, at the Ongwediva Trade Fair Center, and is expected to attract a large number of graduate families and dignitaries. Now, members of the public are advised not to expect increased traffic. Increased traffic volumes in and around Ongwediva, particularly near the Trade Fair Center, between 6 o'clock in the morning and 5 and 3 in the afternoon on the day of the event. If you will be attending, please take note. Gates will be open at 6 and will strictly close at 7. No entry will be permitted after 7. And guests are informed that babies and toddlers will not be permitted inside the venue. All right? Now, attendees are encouraged to plan their journey in advance and arrive early and join IUM in celebrating this memorable occasion. Now, the public is urged to exercise patience and caution to ensure that safety of all road users during this important occasion. Now, IUM extends its heartfelt congratulations to all graduates and look forward to celebrating this memorable event together. Thank you for your cooperation. Thank you for your corporations. All right. So make sure that you attend that memorable and historic event as the first time in the northern regions. All right. So what are we going to do? What happened to my... All right. We're going to come back. After this.
Omudiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikawa shafatha na nana longeshifa ya eshiwike moshiwana.
Imbaya rire ombwa nai epetwa weza kwa ombu nikiro ombe ombi hukusha. Onjiviro yoye irire ombupu o hakaane na wina ikare no masa kumurungu wa indu. Weriro ngere kusha umune ondengu okuura kwa imba. Una oviume vya peke kwa rondola mirongo vitatu na hambu umwe mumwe. Toho, puika ovinki no kukara norupa mondando ya peke yukianja oshimariva. Olo peresente dano kumyeze vitatu moshimariva. Olo peresente umurongo kumyeze hambu umwe moshimariva. Olo peresente umirongo ivari na dano. Kumyeze umurongo na vivari moshimarifu. Itororera ondengu jima yu ungura na wakove na wina wanyano kife. Ashiesho imba yekupe oshimariva shishihina omarithiro. Imba o maoronga neno uye buha kainina. Itako na wina rishangita jinon.
Alright. 30 minutes past the hour of 9. We still have about 30 minutes to go before we hand over this mic to Koka Matikoka Pofi and Barangaja around 10 o'clock. We're handing over to Wintuk. Make sure that you tune in for that show that's coming up around 10 o'clock. Okay, and welcome. You are tuning in to Unpacking the Day. And in this segment, we are unpacking the Total Energy Namibia and their big pitch, their big pitch to local transport and logistic companies. Now, they are saying, so, and I think this is something very, very important. Get closer. So, because they are saying, come join the supply chain. Come join. They have given that invitation. Come and join the supply chain. We want you. That's what they're saying. We want you. And this is a story, as I said, that's a story that make the front page of the Villager, a story by H.T. Hende Walenga. So, we want you. That's what they said. But there is the thing. But here's the thing, okay? But here's the thing. They are also saying, you had better have your house in order, my friend. Okay? You had better have your house in order. That's what I was saying. Because being Namibian is not enough. You can tell who actually have the power here. So, being a Namibian is not enough. Not even close. Okay? And that, my friends, is where the real conversation begins. That's where the real conversation begins. Now, so let me give you a bit of a context. Oh, what is, you know, a bit of a context here. So between 2022 and 2025, the Total Energies drilled 7 wells using 2 rigs out of our coast. All right. So during that time, something shifted. Okay. Now, they went from having just 8 majority Namibian-owned suppliers on their books to 62. So 62. And they say they have spent over $141 million. Okay. Now, 10% of that they claimed, okay, and also according to the paper, according to the story, you know, they claimed went through Namibian suppliers. Their message is clear. Namibians are coming along on this journey. Well, that sounds good. That sounds good. But I still have, you know, some question. It sounds like progress, of course. That sounds like a progress. But let's pause. Let's pause right there and ask this question. Okay? The 10% of $141 million. They said, well, they spend about 10%. That's what I read. So they spend about 10%. Now, the 10% of $140 million. As I said, well, that sounds like a progress, of course. Now, is that enough? Huh? Is that really enough? So when the oil is under our seabed, when our waters are being used, when our environment carries the risk, is 10% really something to celebrate? Well, I want you to think about that. 10%, is that something to celebrate? Well, there's more on the horizon. There's more on the horizon. The final investment decision for the Venus. I always Venus. Venus, Venus, you know, for Venus development. That is PEL, you know, 56. Is targeted for mid-2026. A new block with its PEL 83 called Mopane is expected to see exploration and appraisal wells between the third and the fourth quarter of 2026. Another block, PEL 104, could see seismic activity. Now, the machine is revving up. It's definitely revving up. Now, the question is, will Namibian business be in the driving seat or just a passenger? That's what we keep asking, okay? All right, now, here is where the story takes a turn, okay? So make sure that you subscribe to the Villager. What you need to do is just send your name and your email address to 08 241 44 08 241 44, and definitely you'll be receiving your digital copy of the e-newspaper of our e-newspaper on every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. Make sure that you subscribe today so that you get your in newspaper on Friday already. So do that now. Do that now. Okay, should I stop and wait you for do that? And then you call me and tell me that you have done that? Should I do that? All right. So, yeah. So now let's get into this. Now, here's where the story actually takes a turn. So the story takes a turn here. Total Energy has laid out a system. So they have laid out the system. That's why I said, get closer so that you understand what they require for you if you want to be part of that transport and logistic, you know, supplier. So they laid out a system. Suppliers get classified into 3 tiers. Okay. So tier 1, companies contracted directly with Total Energies. That's tier 1. And these are your big players. Eh? Kausu Smolanyana, you know, something. These are the big players, you know, subsea equipment, real stuff, you know, aircraft, warehousing, offshore logistic, you know, floating production system. Do we have that? That is serious stuff. Those are serious stuff. That's tier 1 companies. Okay. So, and those one will directly, you know, the contract, those company contract directly, they will contract directly with Total Energies. All right. And then tier 2 suppliers are subcontractors. You know, we're talking about catering, road transport, facility management, civil works, you know, power generation, spare parts. You know, these are companies now that supply the tier 1 players. You see, there's a system that I told you, and you rather pay attention. You better pay attention. So these are the companies that supply the tier 1 players. Okay, and then tier 3. Then you have tier 3, even further removed. Typical dealing in raw materials. Yeah, so this one. So the opportunity is real, as you can see. Road transport, catering, civil works. You know, these are areas where Namibian companies can actually compete. Yeah. Yeah, so these are definitely, you know, we have companies that can be able to do this. I think company in road transport, catering, you know, civil works. Yeah, I think we have, these are area Namibian companies can compete, you know. Well, maybe when it comes to oil and gas, I don't know. Maybe they are have knowledge or, but you know, I think those are areas that we can compete. Yeah. But listen carefully to what Total Energy is saying. So I want you to hear this clearly. Eh? So I want you to hear this clearly. Okay. So, Mandume, with your small kanyana, with your small anyana, you know, companies, you know, hear this. So they say, being a local company does not guarantee you a contract. Being a local company does not guarantee you a contract. You know, throw your local content out of the winter, okay? And throw your local content out of winter, okay? It doesn't guarantee you a contract. You must meet the requirement. Full stop. That's the condition. Not your local content policy. You must meet the requirement. That's it. And they're very, 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 very straightforward. Go and read the paper. So I'm sending you there to go and see what is really. It's a very, very interesting one, really. Very, very, very interesting. So make sure that you go there. Now they spell out 6 criteria. They spell out 6 criteria that your company should, this is required for your company. Now, health and safety, anti-bribery. You know, many Namibian, when they hear anti-bribery, they say, okay, that's enough. How do we pass that? We used to bribery. All right. Anti-bribery. Am I reading it right? Bribery. Yeah, bribery. And financial standing. And this is only got company over Kurimo. You make that when the money comes in, you know, you use it the way you want. Yeah? Financial standing. Yeah? Social responsibility. Social responsibility. Technical capacity. That's another big one. I mean, technical capability, not capacity. Technical capability, which also goes with capacity. So you must have a capacity to be able to do, to work technically. You know, technical capability. And administrative compliance. Administrative compliance. You know, six pillars, as you can see them. Health and safety, anti-bribery, financial standing, social responsibility, technical capability, and administrative compliance. So those are the six pillars. And they are not suggestions, okay? They are not suggestions. They are deal breakers. Okay? Any of that, you slack in any one of those, forget it. Don't even start, you know? Now ask yourself this now. Now I have listed all this now. Now ask yourself how many... Now I look at that, looking at myself as well, and say, how many of small Namibian transport operators out there right now have formal, just a formal compliance program? Yeah? A formal compliance program. How many of them have that? How many have the anti-bribery policy documented and enforced? Eh? There's no negotiation. These are, as I said, these are not suggestions. Okay? These are deal breakers, my friend. And how many of you have anti-bribery policies documented and enforced in your companies, in your transport, you know? As a Namibian transport operators. Okay? The other things are this. How many even know what is the U.S. foreign corrupt Foreign Corrupt Practices Act of 1977 is. How many of them know that? I don't, you know. Or the UK Bribery Act of 2010. Or the SACU anti-bribery provision, yeah, from 26. Yeah? So those are the, you know, these are the laws. Now the Total Energy must follow, of course. That's what now the Total Energy must follow. And they are demanding that every single supplier, a contractor, a partner, following them too, they must follow them as well. Hmm? They must follow them. That's exactly what you expected. Due diligence is mandatory. Yeah? It's absolutely mandatory. No exceptions. So what happens then? I mean, if you listen to that, you know, it's canceling out a lot of you. If you're listening, it's canceling out a lot of you already. A lot of us. Let me get specific. Now let's look at the vehicle questions. There's also vehicle things, you know, because this is where now it gets really, really interesting for our local transport operators. So, if you want to move good for Total Energies, listen up, okay? Come closer, you know, put that volume up a little bit, okay? So if you want to move good for Total Energies, you know, your light vehicles must be less than 5 years old, okay? So these are not my rules, okay? These are not my criteria. Go and read the paper. Go and read the paper. So your light vehicle must be less than 5 years old, less than 150,000 kilometers on the clock. Make sure that, you know, well, if it's over that with one, forget it. Okay? So less than 150,000 kilometers on the clock. Heavy vehicles, the road tractors, you know, those heavy ones. Less than 10 years, that's the restrictions or the criteria. Trailers and semi-trailers, less than 15 years. Okay? So, and every single vehicle must have a... So these are the things now it must have. Okay? So every single vehicle must have a, an in-vehicle monitoring system. Now, this is now to track speed. Eh? In-vehicle monitoring system to track speed. A delivery management system. Advanced driver assistance systems. Hey, here people are working with system, my friend. Eh? It's working with system. Now, we're talking about technology that many operators here in this country, you know, have never even heard of. Let alone installed. Eh? Can you imagine? Hmm? Yeah, no. Yeah, no, no. The reason why I found it, it's a very interesting article. The reason that it's, I'm looking at this and said, the reason why I'm actually smiling and laughing is because I see, as I said, your local content is out of the window. Eh? So how do you then, eh? So because how do you remember the, and I understand why the minister was saying, you know, there was not long ago as well, what the minister was saying, he was speaking from where? Where was this? What was this all about? I'm getting old, man. I can't remember things on top of my head. He was saying, he was telling also these companies that take in the SMEs, take in these small companies, you know, lend them the ropes, you know, lend them the ropes, and physically take them through everything. That's what the minister was saying, because he knows these are the things. So we need to, you know, to go through all those kind of understand what are the system, where do we get the system, you know, how much that it requires money as well, yeah, you know, because they're not going to give you money to join them. So, yeah, the Total Energy Logistic Manager also put it very bluntly, you know, blindly, not blindly, but bluntly, you know, plain. Just because you, now this is in terms of a vehicle, that's because you have a car or a truck does not mean you can become a road transport provider. These guys, they are mean, you know. They are mean, eh? They know what they want, though. You know, that's one thing. When you know when you have everything in place, you can chest out, yeah? You can really chest out and say, hey, that's what it's either that or not, my friend. You know? And who's talking? It's them, eh? So they say, well, my friend, it's because it doesn't mean just because you have a car or a truck, it does not mean you can become a road transport provider. So how many Baki owners in Windhoek, you know, Chicago, in Wavish Bay, or wherever, are hearing this right now and realizing that the bar is way higher than they imagined? You know, I'm sitting and think, well, this bar is too higher than I imagined. Eh? So, yeah, this is not a tender. This is not a tender you win because you know someone. Yeah, so that's what we used to, né? This is not a tender you win because you know someone. Forget it, my friend. This is a system that demands you upgraded you upgrade your fleet. That's what it's demand. You must upgrade your fleet, your system, your management, your integrity framework before you even walk through the door. So that's what it demands. Eh? That's what it demands. Upgrade your fleet, my friend. Upgrade your system. Upgrade your management. Yeah? So that's what this is demanding. Not that, okay, it's like some of you get used to tenders and win tenders because you know someone. This ain't happening. All right? So I'm just relaying to you what are the criteria, huh? So, yeah. It's maybe when we can also ask this. You know, we are a developing country. You know, maybe you ask the question, so, is this fair? Is this fair? Is this fair? Let's put it now. Is this fair? Is this fair to set an international standard for a developing economy? Or is it actually the right thing to do? Is it actually the right thing to do? Because we should not accept mediocrity, you know, mediocrity. Is it mediocrity or mediocrity? Just because we are developing. Because we haven't done that in other sectors. We have fishing sectors, we have mining, we have fishing sector, we have meat, you know, where we meet the standard. They bring it on, we meet them. Okay? They bring it on, we meet them, we met them. So whether it's fishing, whether it's, you know, meat, we did. You see? Now, you see, there is a tension here. There is a tension here. Now, there is this is the debate we need to have as a nation, really. So do we lower the bars so more Namibians can participate? Yeah, so it's worth asking, you know. Or do we raise our game to meet the world where it operates? So what do we do? So because sometimes some of these criteria, as I said, you know, it's as I said, you can't just have a requirement to say, ah, you need to do this to them. No, they need to meet the requirement. You can't just say, oh, no, you must include this Namibian, to employ this Namibian, and do what Namibian, what Namibian. No. No. You know, are you meeting the requirement? Are you meeting this international standard? And that's where I said there is this tension, given what we are looking at. So is this, I'm asking, well, do we have now to lower the bar for some Namibians? Maybe let's put it, you know, so that we have more Namibians actually who can participate, or do we raise ourselves now? We are the one who had to raise our game to meet the world where it operates. So which is which? Which is which? Yeah, all right. Namibia's our oil story is still being written. It's still being written. We are not pumping oil yet. I think it just everybody should be able to understand. We are not pumping oil yet. The final investment decision for Venus is still a target. Not done deal yet. The supply chain, it's already taking shape. I think it's already taking shape. So, but there's a worry. I mean, here's what worries me. Okay? Somebody said, you're always worried. Huh? No. I'm not. So, but this is what worries me. If Namibian business, look at where we are now. If Namibian business do not position themselves now, we're talking about now. The final investment decision is just about in the next quarter or the last quarter of the year. So, and if it goes like it's fine. So think of that. Now, if Namibian business do not position themselves now, right now, you know, the contract will go to international companies who already meet this standard. Do you see this? Yeah? If we haven't been prepared for 5 years from now, if we haven't have got companies that are ready right now, we are so far behind. Because the company wants to start, you don't have people ready. You don't have people ready. So what happened? The contracts will go to international companies who already meet this standard. Simple as that, my dear. Simple as that. So we have what? Then we have South African logistic firms. Yeah, we do. You know, European operators, companies that have been doing this for decades, for years. They are ready. Are we? That's the question. Are we ready? Are we ready? And Total Energy is telling our companies, telling the local companies to go, go to our website. Go to our website and register in the supply database. So go there, okay? They are saying, put your information in and we will assess you. but regular examination weights. It awaits you. All right? As we have seen some of the things that you need to have. Make sure that when you go there and submit or, register, you have everything. You get everything. They will check if you are legitimate. They will check if you meet every single requirement. So the call to action is real. It's there. Okay? But the preparation needed is enormous. I think it's really, really enormous. I'm not taking it for granted like some do. It's really enormous. And I have to wonder, where is the support? Seriously. Where is the support? Let's say, for example, as a small SME, you probably interested, you have a little whatever. Where is the support? Where is the government program to help local transport operators upgrade, as we're talking earlier, upgrade their fleet, for example? Where is the funding mechanism, you know, to help the small businesses install compliance system? Yeah, we're talking about compliance system. Where will they get the money, really, to fund this kind of mechanism? Yeah? Where is the training? And this is what the minister was saying, actually. I said, well, you're asking that this company should be able to help us, you know, with the training, with the, you know, show us your system, and then we can be able to, you know, see how, where we can get help or something. You know, where is the funding? Where is the funding mechanism? Because now setting the bar higher without providing a ladder, okay? The bar is too high and you're not providing a ladder. I think that's not empowerment. That's not empowerment. That's gatekeeping dressed as an opportunity. Yeah? No, seriously. Total Energy has whistleblowing system, a risk assessment, due diligence procedures, you know, accounting controls, training programs, and disciplinary measures. They have all this. That is the internal anti-corruption machineries. You know, every supplier must mirror that. That's what they say. Every supplier must mirror that now. Now, I'm saying, okay, I'm not saying we should tolerate corruption. That's not what I'm saying. Absolutely not. Okay? We have seen enough that, we have seen enough of that in this country. So, we have seen enough in this country to know it destroys everything it touches. So we know that. Okay? That's what I'm saying. All right? So, but here's the difference between fighting corruption and creating compliance mess that only big, well-resourced companies can navigate, actually. And we need to be honest about that distinction. We gotta be honest about that distinction. All right? So we need to. All right. So it's 10 o'clock. Let me just run through, probably just give you a takeaway of this unpacking. You know, what have we looked at, and what is actually the story is talking about, the article is talking about. Then you can go and read it for yourself. Now, Total Energy is opening its doors, you know, to Namibian suppliers. And the growth from 8 to 6 to 2 local suppliers shows a movement. It shows some movement, definitely. But 10%, I was talking about earlier, 10% of a total spent. That raises the question. Is that genuine? Is that genuinely transformative? Okay, when you're looking at that now, is that genuinely transformative? Or is it a starting point that must be pushed higher? Well, it could be a starting point, but it needs to be pushed higher. All right? Now, the requirement are non-negotiable. Okay? There are these requirements which are actually non-negotiable. You have anti-bribery compliance, vehicle age limits, monitoring systems, and formal management framework. You know, and these are mandatory. Mandatory. Now, this is not an old, you know our old style of tendering. So this is not the one, you know, according to this. So this is international standard contracting. Eh? And it leaves no room for shortcuts. You know your soccer. Hey, I know who is who. I know so and so. So nah. There is no shortcut. So the real gap, I think the real gap is not in the policy, it is in the preparation. That's where the gap is. It's in the preparation. Without targeted support for local, you know, local businesses, without funding, without training for Namibian business to meet this standard, I think the local content promise risks being a promise on a paper only. I can tell you that. From what I see here, it's just, it actually risks being a promise on the paper only. So the door is open, but the step to get through, are steep, you know. Wafuno mama nyako moro ito dru kwenda uyeko, you know. Unom manyawe ya kwete kuchumero apatruka, you know. But to get into that, it's you know. During apartheid, let me take maybe in South Africa, where in certain beaches it's written white only. You know, you can see the beach, but once you come to the sign that tells you, hey, white only, so this is the same thing. So we see the criteria. The door is open. It's open, but you know, steps to get in. You can see that are really heavy. So I put it to you, Namibian. My Namibia, is Total Energy raising the bar for our own good? Or is the bar so high that only the well-connected and well-funded will ever clear it? Eh? So let's have a conversation, not now, wherever you find yourself, because this is our oil. This is our coast, you know, where this is happening, and this is our future. So let's have discussion. Let's, wherever you find yourself, you know, let's talk about this. And my dear friend, and that's bring us to 4 minutes past 10. I know, Mbarangaja is waiting, you know, with Kutha Mosha coming up, shortly. Make sure that you stay tuned for that. And let me say my goodbye to you now. And I can guarantee you, we will be here tomorrow at the same time, you know, tackling another, you know, headlines, that matter, to us all. So make sure that you book that seat for yourself and unpack it with me. And thanks for listening. It has been quiet this morning. But I know you have been listening. So from me, Michael Chiavelli, I wish you all the best for today. Let's talk again tomorrow. That's a goodbye.